Hi, my name is Deirdre Heekin, and I am the proprietor of Osteria Pane e Salute, a little restaurant and wine bar in Woodstock, Vermont, and also the author of a brand new book out called An Unlikely Vineyard, The Education of a Farmer and Her Quest for Terroir, as well as being the wine grower for La Garagista. And you can reach me at our website, lagaragista.com, and also at our restaurant website, osteriapaneesalute.com.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain.
Welcome to Wine and Dine. Welcome, Deirdre Heekin, the author of An Unlikely Vineyard, and I like this part of your title even better, The Education of a Farmer and Her Quest for Terroir. And you are a busy woman, to say the least. You're the proprietor and wine director of Osteria Pane e Salute, an acclaimed restaurant and wine bar in Woodstock, Vermont. And you and your husband, who is head chef Caleb Barber, are the authors of In Late Winter We Ate Pears. How long have you been living in Vermont?
Oh, gosh. You know, total number of years, it's probably been, maybe 26.
Okay.
I went to school here. I went to college here.
And what did you study in college?
I studied an interesting melange of things, English and film, English literature and film, as well as dance.
Oh.
So nothing related to, you know, food or farming or environment, but I think things that definitely prepared me for entering into those fields.
And I'm dying to ask then, naturally, what kind of dance and what kind of music were you studying?
So for dance, we were doing modern work, both choreographed and a lot of improvisational work as well, which again, I mean, I refer to that all the time as having really prepared me and us well for the journey that we've taken and the adventures we've gone on. Having an improvisational ability or attitude really
And was that kind of because it taught you in some way to be more of a critical thinker and be in the moment?
I think in the moment and being able to respond intuitively and then be able to take that information from each experience and, you know, hold it for the next experience and using that in responses, you know, whether that's in the restaurant for a dinner service for the evening and the kinds of things that come your way during a restaurant night, both in the kitchen and out on the floor, to how we farm and being able to respond to the landscape and that season's weather and the plants themselves. Not getting too prescriptive, thinking more observationally. You know, what are we seeing? What are we sensing? And I think that that's been one of the most valuable things to have studied for us.
So you met your husband in college also?
Yes, yeah.
And was he...
So we've been together for a while, too.
Was he studying culinary? Did he get a culinary degree in college, or where did he learn how to be a chef?
Yeah, he's self-taught. On the cooking front, he studied in college philosophy and German and dance, but he always loved to cook and was always really interested in cooking. And he was a year ahead of me in school, so he came back to the village where we had studied after he graduated so that he could be around for my last year. And he began working in a restaurant at that time and worked his way up and just really enjoyed being in the kitchen and learning about food and learning about cooking. And that kind of set him on that path, not necessarily in a cognizant way at that time, but we had an opportunity to live and work in Italy doing dance work, actually.
Oh, wow.
Shortly after we got married, And, well, right after we got married. A day after we got married.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we flew the day after. And that experience, living and working there in that, you know, such a food-based culture and wine-based culture really turned our heads. And, you know, when we moved back stateside, that part of our experience had really lighted a fire underneath us, and we knew that we wanted to do something related to food and wine, and had this concept of eventually having our own restaurant that was based on ideas or a concept of a family restaurant that we had witnessed and been a part of when we were living there.
Were you brought up in the northeastern part of the United States? I mean, was Vermont fairly close to where you were born and raised?
No, I was born and raised in southern Indiana, which is actually quite south. It's south of Louisville, Kentucky. And I came out to Vermont to go to school. Caleb, however, was raised here in Vermont. So he had a long relationship, and his father is a many-generation family from here in the state.
When you were growing up, did your parents have a garden in the back? I mean, were you getting homegrown zucchini and that sort of thing in the summertime?
We did do some gardening, but we had horses. That was really what our farming was about. And where I grew up is a major agricultural area in the country. And, you know, there's certainly many very large farms there, but there are also a lot of smaller farmsteads and farm stands. So there was so much great produce around us that we eventually, as a family, stopped doing our own vegetable gardening and really focusing all our energy on the horses. But we certainly had it plenty good stuff available, and was a part of our lifestyle and culture growing up.
Yeah, I grew up with horses also. It's very fond memories.
Yeah, likewise.
So I cannot, and I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, on the east side in the snow belt.
Yeah.
So I'm familiar with this crazy weather that can be up north. And I'm curious, you must be a diehard workaholic. Because if you're a farmer, you're 7 days a week, and you're a restaurateur, you're basically 7 days a week, because you're always thinking ahead of what's available to purchase, what you're going to make. Is your idea of fun is going out and working in the kitchen or working in the vineyard or the orchard?
Absolutely. And our schedule, I mean, that is definitely, you know, you put your finger right on the challenge for us, having these two spheres that are very intimately interconnected, but also require full attention. And our challenge is the balance, trying to find the balance between those two. And we've done things like, for example, our restaurant is open 4 nights a week. We're open Thursday through Sunday. So that leaves us Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday to really be able to devote all of our thinking to the farm and the vineyards. But as you rightly say, we are thinking about those things all week long,
right?
And we are certainly thinking about the restaurant all week long. And, you know, I think because they are intimately connected, we farm a lot of the produce for the restaurant. We've started to do some livestock here as well, with the help of another young farmer to have at the restaurant, you know, so that the two become closer and closer together as we move along. And when we're thinking about one, it makes sense that we're also thinking about the other.
You know, having a glass of wine and sitting down at a restaurant where you don't have to do any cooking preparation or cleanup is the definition of relaxation.
Yes.
But there is a tremendous amount of work to make all that relaxation possible.
Right.
So
right.
What do you guys get any downtime at all?
So we, in the past, before the vineyards really became a part of our project and the wine really took off, we were on a schedule of being closed at the restaurant for the month of November and the month of April, and we would always try and travel one of those months and try to get back to Italy every year to kind of get re-inspired and also take a break. And that worked very, very well for a number of years for exactly what you're saying, for that downtime, for that relaxation time. Now, with the vineyards coming online, that schedule isn't quite as possible. with things like pruning that need to happen in April and the finish of harvest in October and sometimes in early November.
Wow.
So that's a piece that we're trying to figure out. We know that we need to take a break and a breather, and we don't have the answer to that yet, and haven't had for the past 2 years. So, you know, whether it's being able to take a chunk of time off, or doing more smaller breaks throughout the season, or eventually becoming more seasonal at the restaurant, you know, we don't know the answers to those questions, but we're working on them.
Our guest today is Deirdre Heekin, and she's the author of the brand new An Unlikely Vineyard, The Education of a Farmer and Her Quest for Terroir, with a foreword by Alice Ferry. We'll be right back. This is iWine Radio, first in internet radio wine talk. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain. Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain. Welcome to Wine and Dine. Today we're talking to Deirdre Heekin, author of An Unlikely Vineyard, The Education of a Farmer and Her Quest for Terroir, and along with her husband, Caleb, are owners of a restaurant in Woodstock, Vermont, and a wine shop, Osteria Penny Salute. And I'm curious, how is the restaurant laid out? Is there actually a wine shop that is part of next to the restaurant? Do people select their wines in the wine bar and then go into the restaurant, or how is it set up?
So we don't really have a wine shop per se. It's both restaurant and wine bar all in one space.
Okay.
So the way it's laid out, it's very, 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 very tiny. We have about, you know, 6 or 7 tables and a little bar, which we tend to reserve everything every night, including the bar. And the way I've curated the wine list is my focus, because of my experience in Italy, has kind of naturally gone towards Italian wines, and I really focus on regional native varietals that are not as well known or not known at all here in the United States. And then I also focus on particular kinds of farming, you know, small family operations that are organic or biodynamic in their farming and in their thinking also in the cellar. Because I'm a real believer, especially now that I'm a wine grower, that the wine happens in the field. So the wine list is set up that way, but it's a very interesting process. When you come to dine at the restaurant, most people take a quick look at the wine list and then sort of say, okay, well, let's have a conversation. What should we drink tonight? What should we have with our food? Would you choose things for us? And I do what I would call personalized pairings based on the food each person is ordering.
Okay.
And I'm happy to pair wines to those dishes. And then for me and for the guest, it becomes a real dialogue about the wine and about the food. And that's what's really exciting to me, the way that has evolved over the years in my relationship with the guests, and that people, you know, they come to the restaurant certainly for Caleb's food, but they also come to experience wines that they may not have experienced before, and they want to have a conversation, and that's pretty cool.
And are they ordering wine by the glass? Are you providing that service, or are there a couple different bottles going on at the table? Depending upon the size.
It's usually more often than not wine by the glass, because that gives everybody an opportunity to taste several different things through the course of the evening. And I found that most of our guests now are really excited by that notion, and they share back and forth. You know, if it's a couple, or you know, even if it's a table of four, they all share around. And oh, that's really interesting, and oh, that goes with your dish, and I see why you're having this one with that dish, and they have a dialogue. But people also do, they're welcome to order by the bottle as well. And, you know, I'm often a big part of that decision-making process. And, you know, I have two views on it. You're either having the opportunity to taste several things throughout the evening, or you order a bottle that you get to know throughout the evening as it evolves.
There you go.
From the moment that it's open till the end of the bottle. And both are equally valid and equally interesting, I think.
And I'm going to, you provided a perfect segue to go into getting to know your vineyard. When you first purchased your property, it's like a new client coming in to sit down at the restaurant. You're kind of playing touchy-feely. You don't really know them. And, you know, they come back several times. You kind of develop a rapport with them. So how many years now are you making wine, specifically growing grapes and making wine from your property?
Yeah, so commercially, we've been making wine. This was our fifth, 2014 was our fifth vintage.
Okay.
But I had been making wine before then, just for home, as an educational project for myself as a sommelier. And I wasn't growing the fruit then. I was buying fruit at market. But that, you know, greatly informed a lot of decisions that I would then later make. And of course, I didn't know that it was informing me at the time. But, you know, a few years into making wine from bought fruit, I really felt like, you know, the education I'm looking for is to experience what the producers experience, the producers that I represent on my wine list. I wanted to go through, it kind of goes back to my dance training, especially my improvisational dance training, wanting to understand kinesthetically the process of making wine.
There you go.
And, yeah, so that was a big piece for me. The more I got in my own wine, more further I went in my own wine education. And then I finally came to the realization, well, if I'm going to have that experience, I actually have to grow the fruit, too. And it happened that at the same time, a friend had told us about another vineyard here in Vermont that was making some really nice wine and said, you should go check these guys out and see what they're doing. And Caleb and I went to visit and tasted through their wines and were incredibly impressed. I mean, they were making some really, and still are making some really, really lovely things with fruit grown here in the state, grown on their own property. And we were so impressed and excited and inspired by what they were doing that we left their vineyard and tasting room that day with something like 180 vines in the back of our car.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they had a nursery at the time, and we're like, okay, we're doing this. This is, you know, this is my answer to this piece of education that I'm looking for. And that was back in, I believe, in 2007, 2008, that we started planting here. So, you know, as soon as I was able to get fruit from this vineyard, I've been making wine. But I also started making wine back in 2010 with fruit from another vineyard that we now lease. And that's under, you know, our management and essentially our vineyard through a lease arrangement. And they're two owned by the same owner that we lease from him. And we started doing that in the last year. But I've been making wine from those parcels, as I said, since 2010.
And were those parcels already planted?
They were. So they are older than my vineyards here at the home farm. So it's been great to be able to work with vines that have a little bit more age on them and learn from them as my own vineyard begins to grow, you know, towards that same age.
When in your book, An Unlikely Vineyard, you take the added step that other people don't, other authors don't, is that you're actually informing the reader how you went about making the decisions of how you were going to plant your vineyard, how you're going to manage your vineyard. I mean, really, step by step, it's almost like a how-to book.
Right, right. That those parts of it are. And that was really important for me to get down in writing for a number of reasons, for myself, but also it was the book that I wanted when I started. I certainly had access to a lot of producers through my work as a sommelier, and certainly I have a fantastic group of mentors. But because Vermont is a new wine region, and we have maybe, they're close to maybe 30 producers here now, but we're all starting out. We're a new frontier. So I'm not living next to a family that's been growing wine for five generations that can give me information on a daily basis that I can pop over and say, hey, how do you do this? How do you do that? So that was something that I was really hungry for when I started out. And I really want to encourage people to, even if they're just putting in a few vines for themselves, I want to encourage people to do that. Because I think it's an incredibly exciting and important gesture that we can do to connect with our land. If you have land of your own, or if you have a friend who has some land, that you can plant a garden, that you can plant a few vines. I want to inspire people to do that.
I have a couple more questions for you, but one of them just occurred to me in your conviction to inspire others to do likewise. And how do you feel about this notion that in part civilization is based on people settling down and growing vines, not making beer, for instance?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think that civilization is actually, you trace it back to fire and fermentation. And, you know, I mean, when you read in history books, they'll say, you know, the moment that we had fire was when things started to get really interesting. But that occurred roughly, I think, about the same time as fermentation began. And I think that any kind of fermentation, whether it's, you know, planting a vine and making wine, of course, old-fashioned brewing, beer brewing, always happened with material that was grown around whoever was brewing the beer, the hops or the wheat or the barley or the rye, food fermentations, you know, like cheese, or we look at Asian cultures, you know, things like kimchi, mm-hmm. you know, those things have been going on for a very, very, very long time. Yogurt.
Even bread,
exactly. So I think any of those fermentations are an important piece to, you know, culture, civilization, settlement, and they often go hand in hand with working the land as well in some fashion.
Our guest today is Deirdre Heekin, and she's the author of the brand new An Unlikely Vineyard, The Education of a Farmer and Her Quest for Terroir, and we'll be right back. This is iWine Radio, first in wine talk. So what kind of grape varieties did you when you first left with those 180, 170 vines in the back of your vehicle, what kind of grape varieties did you bring home to plant? And do you still have those same grape varieties in the ground?
Yes, I do. And those varieties are all cold hardy varieties that most producers are growing here in Vermont. Things like there's a red grape called Marquette, who traces its history back to Pinot Noir. There's a white grape called La Crescent, which is connected to several different kinds of Moscato from Alpine Italy. There's another white varietal that traces its pedigree back to Southern French, kind of obscure Southern French varietals. And when I say traces, it's, you know, lineage or pedigree, I mean that, you know, these are cold hardy grapes that are varietal crosses, horticultural crosses between European varieties and Native American wild varieties. And for me, they are incredibly exciting because they are uniquely American. They are there, I see them as very symbolic of our own melting pot, you know, of all the peoples that have come here from abroad and, you know, mixed with the native people and native environment here. And here we have this, you know, unique vine and then unique wine that can be made from those things. So those are things that we have in the vineyard. We have also done some work with traditional vinifera European varietals like Riesling and Blaufränkisch. However, I will say that in our home vineyard, which is quite alpine and much higher altitude than our other two vineyards over near Lake Champlain, it's much harder to grow those here.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe you would have a harvest one year, maybe not the next. They're certainly more susceptible to the extreme kinds of colds that we can have. And when I first started, I thought, oh, I really want to try growing vinifera here. I think it's possible. And these are the kinds of wines that I'm familiar with, and I want to choose varietals that are also alpine in nature and come from those kinds of places culturally. But as I began to make wine with the cold hardy varietals and to see the potential, the wines that can be made from those kinds of grapes, making wine from vinifera has become, you know, much less important to me, if important at all. It would certainly be fun and exciting to do so, but I am very happy making wine and growing wine from these cold hardy varietals.
And you're making still and sparkling wines and ciders also from your orchards?
Yes, exactly.
So, Deirdre, what is the name of your label, and can people... when I was up on the website, I saw that several of the wines are already sold out, but can people go to your website, order the wines, and you ship them?
You can contact me directly through the website. We don't have a license yet for shipping direct to consumer.
Okay.
However, you know, I can, if somebody makes contact with me, I can find out where they are and maybe direct them to a wine shop in their area. We do have wine in New York City and Boston, soon to be California, soon to be Montreal, certainly here in Vermont. We're hoping to have a little bit in Arizona.
Wow.
And there are a couple of shops that also do mail order or internet sales, so
okay.
I can direct people to those shops as well.
And what is the label? Name? Yeah.
Yeah, the label is called La Garagista,
which has
many meanings for us, but one of them is the woman who makes wine in her garage. And we now have an actual winery and have moved some of the operations out of the garage, but it's still small and looks a little bit like a garage. We wanted to keep that feeling as we've grown.
Final question here. There is a garagiste movement in California, and they have an annual conference every year. Do you participate in that?
I have not had an opportunity to do that yet, but I think it's really exciting what's happening out in California right now.
Yeah, you don't have time to sew a button, I would think.
I know. That's just about right.
Oh,
but
gosh.
It would be great to be able to participate in things like that at some point.
You have to have an ambassador, a Deirdre Heekin ambassador that will go to things like that on your behalf. Well, Deirdre, we'd like to thank you so very much for your time this week on iWine Radio and your book, An Unlikely Vineyard, and the education of a farmer and her quest for terroir. It's all about terroir. It's all about place. And it's an absolutely lovely book. We thank you so very much for your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show, Lynn.
Our guest today is Deirdre Heekin, and she's the author of the brand new An Unlikely Vineyard, The Education of a Farmer and Her Quest for Terroir. You're listening to iWine Radio. This is iWine Radio, first in Internet Radio Wine Talk. I'm Lynn Crelo-Chamberlain.